In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
That's right. Let's all go to the lobby. Time to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn. Alan Adams from The Main Edge right here in studio with us. Hello, sir.
Hello. How are you?
Good, good. You like this springy, wet and wild out there?
I've given up trying to understand what's going on up there. Yeah. Just like, all right, just, I don't know, rain, snow, ice, whatever. Let's just get to April.
I agree with you on that. How was your weekend?
It was good. Pretty busy. As we've talked about, I'm in the cast of the upcoming Penobscot Theater show, Hockey Mom. So we had a bunch of rehearsal stuff going on. It's been a fun process. There are some things. I'm doing some things on stage that I've never done before. I'm
playing the hockey mom, right?
I will say there is a sequence where I am supposed to help a child put on his hockey gear.
Ooh.
I am unfamiliar with hockey gear.
Wow.
If our initial attempts are any indication, I'm going to need some work.
Now, you don't have to actually skate, do you?
I don't, thank God.
But I heard about the set, and it sounds like it's going to be incredible.
Yeah, like there's all this. I mean, it's, they're doing a lot of stuff. Like it's basically, the conceit is it's a hockey rink, but there are, you know, some modular pieces to move in and out to create living spaces. Sean McClelland, who's done a number of designs for PTC over the years, he's also an avid recreational hockey player, and so I think a lot of that experience has translated to this set design. But yeah, like, you know, they're gonna have rafters. They're talking about having like banners hanging and stuff. Like, it's gonna be very cool. I'm very much looking forward to people getting an opportunity to see it. I am on stage for a bit. Our good friend Jenny Hart, however, pretty much doesn't leave for the vast majority of the show. Like,
is she the titular
hockey mom. She's doing a great job. But just watching her rehearse, I'm kind of exhausted. So, the kids are great. The rest of the cast is wonderful. We're having a good time.
Well, good. Well, I look forward to hearing more about it along the way. Movies, three of them this week. Do we save the big one for last?
I think we have to.
All right.
Right.
So where do we begin?
We'll talk about, Lucy and Desi.
Oh yeah.
It's the new documentary, currently streaming on Amazon Prime Video, directed by Amy Poehler. And it is what it purports to be. It is the story of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. It's interesting because it's very much focused on their relationship. Like, all the other stuff is there. The early days with, you know, Lucy, sort of getting her start as almost a bombshell in these B movies, Desi's initial start as work as a band leader, and then sort of moving. They meet on the set of Too Many Girls, I believe is the name of the film. They wind up getting married, they wind up pitching the show to CBS that would become I Love Lucy, the absolutely massive phenomenon that it would become. See some of that experience, and we see how it impacts their relationship, both for the positive and the negative, moving forward through the birth of their children, their eventual divorce, their relationships, their marriages to other people, both marriages considerably longer than their marriage to each other. Walking through that world and spending time, like, learning some of the intricacies of Desi Lu, and, you know, and I gotta say, it was kind of fascinating. Like, a lot of archival footage. One of the great things is they got access to actual, like, audio recordings and home movie footage. Wow. That hasn't been seen before. So a lot of this stuff you're getting it's Lucy's voice, it's Desi's voice. You know, you're actually hearing from them, which is one of the things that's always a little bit of a pitfall when it comes to these sorts of documentaries. When you're telling the story of someone who's no longer with us, it's all second and third hand. But because of these recordings, we have sort of firsthand information, a firsthand discussion.
Interesting.
They've got some talking heads. their daughter Lucy, the children of some of the folks who worked on I Love Lucy, Jess Oppenheimer's kid, the gentleman, I forget his name, the primary director of I Love Lucy,
Bill Asher,
his son, and then you've got like Carol Burnett, Carl Reiner, Charo, and all interspersed with the footage that from the shows and stuff that you've seen. But what's really fascinating about it is you just like things like this. We tend to be so reductive when it comes to people who are so incredibly famous for a specific thing. And it's easy for other contributions to kind of fall by the wayside. And one of the things, and it can't be stressed enough, how influential these two were on the industry writ large. Desi Arnaz essentially invented how sitcoms are
right.
filmed,
how they're filmed, the rerun,
yeah, like all this stuff. Like he basically pioneered like live to tape, so it's like filmed before a live studio audience. That wasn't a thing before Desi Arnaz showed up. Multi-camera setups, filming so that because television was primarily live back in that day, recording to film so that West Coast, East Coast, everybody got the same consistent quality of...
And so they could take a little break and have a wee bit of family time.
Exactly. Yeah. But then there were other things where it was just like there was this one tidbit and I was floored. Did you know Desi Arnaz introduced the conga line to America?
I did know that, actually. Yes.
Well, I mean, who am I asking? I did not know that. And so it was just like, oh, okay. So it's like... But yeah, so it's this really fascinating sort of look at their relationship, and we move past in the years after I Love Lucy, their various projects. They talked about frankly wealth of other television programming that Desi Lu pioneered. I mean, Star Trek,
absolutely.
Like, that's the big one. Yes. Like Star Trek does without Lucille Ball, Star Trek doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. At least not in the way that we know it. So it's just a really fascinating story. And then, it talks about their marriages to other people, their other projects, but they continued to work together, even after the divorce. And it was very clear, it was just across the board. Everybody was like these two, they still loved each other. Like they just couldn't be married.
Right.
And so that affection, I think, carried through right through to the end of their lives. According to their daughter, other than her and his nurse, the last person that Desi Arnaz spoke to was Lucille Ball.
Wow.
So it's just, and that was the moment where I'm like, oh gosh, I'm it's a little dusty in here. But it's a really well made movie. It was for anyone who's got any interest at all in the people behind the characters that they so loved on television, you should really check out Lucy and Desi.
And it's so interesting that 70 some years after their show debuted, they're having their biggest year in decades.
It's unbelievable. And man, you watch the clips in this movie, and it's like it holds up. Like it's really remarkable how ahead of their time they were in so many respects. Just great. And between this being the Ricardos, they're back in the spotlight, as it should be.
Definitely. We're talking with Alan Adams from The Main Edge on Downtown. Tell us about Fresh.
So this is a tough one because this is one of those movies where the central conceit is revealed fairly far into the film, and I don't want to spoil that. I'll put it this way. What we have here is a very well-made, very dark satire about modern life, whether it be, the modern dating or the, economic inequality, what have you, refracted through a very, very cracked mirror. I'll take you up to the title card because I will say one thing about this movie that I was frankly delighted by. Title card doesn't show up until like over half an hour into the movie. Like you get the entire like the entire first act before the title card drops, and it drops at a very specific time. But yeah, so you've got a young woman named Noah, played by Daisy Edgar Jones. She's looking for love. She's trying all the usual tactics, you know, trying dating apps, getting, you know, setups, all these things, and it's just not working out. We actually meet her as she's on a really terrible first date with a scarf-wearing hipster who's just the worst. And, you know, so we see that sort of crash and burn. She moves forward. She goes to the gym, starts, you know, confiding in her best friend, a woman named Molly, played by JoJo Gibbs, who's supportive, but also very very upfront about the idea of her, you know, you don't need no man, as they say. But one night, just kind of out of nowhere, Noah's luck starts to change a little bit. She's at the grocery store, and she encounters this guy. His name's Steve, played by Sebastian Stan. And, you know, he's charming, he's funny, but very respectful. You know, he acknowledges the awkwardness that comes with actually meeting in real life. He makes her laugh, you know, but doesn't, you know, doesn't push it. And she's engaged enough. She's like, you know what? Here's my number. Even though she's pretty sure nothing's going to come of it. But something does come of it.
Oh.
Before you know it, they're an item. They're dating. They're spending all this time together. They're having a great time. He's attentive. He's sweet, giving her this level of romantic engagement that, you know, she's really been looking for. He's handsome. Turns out he's a doctor. Like, you know, it all seems pretty good. Molly, in fact, thinks it might be a little too good. Points out some red flags. You know, certain things like he has nothing in the way of a social media presence, which Molly's like, what normal human doesn't have a social media presence today? But you know, it's, you know, she's happy and she's like, you know, I'm going to ignore, you know, these sorts of whatever weird warning signs Molly thinks there are. And I'm just going to embrace this relationship. So much so that when Steve proposes that they go on a trip, she's like, yeah, okay. It's a little soon, but okay, we'll go on a trip. He says it's going to be a surprise, and she's like, oh, well, okay, and then get in. And then they're in the car, and he's like, actually, I can't. We're going to, you know, it's a place called Cottage Grove. He's like, yeah, we're going to this resort. And she's like, oh, great, because I hate surprises. He's like, but we are going to have to wait. You know, there's some traffic, so we can't really go right away. Spend the night at my place, and then we'll go. And then stuff gets weird, Rich. It gets dark. It gets kind of grisly, and we venture into some pretty intense horror and horror adjacent territory. But not necessarily in a way that you would anticipate, which is why I'm trying to be very careful with the choice of my words, because it's the twist is excellent, and when it hits, everything, like, you go back through what you've seen and you're like, oh, this is great. They've been setting me up this whole time.
Signs were there.
Yeah, but they've been pointing me in this direction all the time. And then it just blows up in a way that I'll just say, go into this movie as clean as you can. Like, do your best to not know anything about the specifics, because the reveal is so bizarre and crazy and delightful in its way that it's well worth not knowing what's coming.
All right.
That being said, I can say it's a very well made movie. It's got a great look. The performances are excellent. Daisy Edgar Jones is a very talented performer. She does a wonderful job, kind of in a very low key way. She underplays in a way that I think is very important for a film like this. And man, Sebastian Stan just goes for it. Nice. Like, it is such a unhinged and delightful performance. I don't think it's spoiling anything to say. I will say, there's a sequence in this movie after which you will never, ever hear Animotion's Obsession the same way again. Yeah, like it just, it's super fun. It does get a little gory at times. I don't feel like that's a spoiler. There's a very specific content warning at the beginning of the film when you stream it on Hulu, so that's not a spoiler. But yeah, it's super fun. It's super smart. It has a lot of good things to say, and you know, it's anchored by these phenomenal performances. Just yeah, like I was expecting to sort of be ho-hum about this movie, but it turned out to be something that I really, really enjoyed.
All right. That sounds interesting. Well, finally, a big box office, all kinds of buzz out there for The Batman. Tell us all about it.
I was curious about how this was gonna go box office wise. I mean, obviously it was gonna win the weekend and it was gonna have a pretty big, you know, sort of turnout for these, you know, few days. But it's also a 3-hour movie. And that length puts a cap on how many times you can screen it during a day. Mm. And that was one of the things I was like, you know, basically by having it be that long, you're basically losing a showing per screen over the course of, you know, every day. And so it's like, so how is that going? Is that going to negatively impact the numbers? It does not appear to have done much harm. I think the last number I saw was something like $135 million for the weekend, something like that. You know, which is far and away the biggest opening, second biggest opening of the pandemic, behind only the frankly still astonishing numbers that Spider-Man: No Way Home put up. Yeah, it's directed by Matt Reeves, who did Cloverfield. He did the last two in the new Planet of the Apes trilogy. Man, I really liked it. It's clearly an effort to bring the character back down to earth a little bit after things kind of maybe got a little out of control in the Zack Snyder years. You know, it's a much more grounded take on the character. Like, there's nobody in this version of Gotham City, nobody has superpowers. Like, it's just it's a guy who's clearly emotionally broken, dealing with trauma, and doing so by trying to clean up the streets. Like, Robert Pattinson plays our titular Batman. It is year two of his Batman experience. Like, he's still very new at being Batman, and so you know, the other sort of characters are on that same sort of timeline. Specifically, I mentioned someone like Commissioner. We call him Commissioner Gordon. He's played by Jeffrey Wright here. He is not yet Commissioner. He is Lieutenant Gordon. He is, however, Batman's sole champion on the Gotham police force. Because, as it turns out, police officers, not big fans of costumed weirdos doing vigilante justice. Our Batman is trying to clean up Gotham streets as best he can. It's a lot of very street-level, very grimy kind of crime fighting. But things start to elevate when the mayor... The incumbent mayor, who's currently in a very tightly contested race for his re-election campaign, winds up dead. He's killed by a mysterious assailant who leaves behind a crazy cipher and weird sort of like birthday card type things addressed to the Batman. This would turn out to be the Riddler. But this is not your mother's Riddler. This is not Frank Gorshin wearing a suit coat with question marks on it. Like, this is it's difficult to describe just how creepy the character is. It is revealed eventually that he is played by Paul Dano, who is frankly fantastic in this. And so we have that case. We have a missing waitress from the notorious Club Iceberg, which is a local hotspot where figures from organized crime and from, you know, the the quote-unquote good guys can mingle out of sight, out of mind, and deal with all the corruption that is the hallmark for all iterations of Gotham City throughout the years. Batman gets enlisted to help a young lady by the name of Selina, played by Zoe Kravitz, to track down her missing friend. But as they venture down that path, it soon becomes clear that this goes much deeper and much higher than either of them could have anticipated, leading to a battle against all of the rogue elements in Gotham City. Bad guys, good guys, everybody in between. You've got a hero of sorts who doesn't really know who he can trust. I won't get into the weeds as far as the plot stuff is concerned. It's a 3-hour movie, so there's a lot of plot. But here's what I'm going to say. This is a wonderfully made movie. This movie has a wonderful sensibility. It is clearly anchored by a desire to emulate the gangster films of the 30s and 40s. It has that. Interesting. It has a very noir kind of vibe to it in places. However, it also clearly draws inspiration from sort of the urban corruption films that we saw in the New Hollywood of the 70s. Like I've seen a couple of places mention Serpico as an influence, and I'm like, you can kind of see it, and it gets very Hitchcockian. There's some paranoid thriller vibes to it. All of it sort of folded into this wonderfully distinct visual package. It's got the sort of, we have certain expectations of Gotham being a sort of neo-Gothic kind of place in terms of its architecture. And we have that, but it's not nearly to the, it doesn't venture into the sort of cartoony extremes that we kind of saw in the Burton films or anything like that. It's still grounded in a sort of reality. You know, our Batman doesn't have the gigantic supercomputer and all the technology, because it's still new. Like, and so he has some of that, but it's all rendered in a much less extreme way. He doesn't live in Wayne Manor on the outskirts of the city. Like, he lives in a high rise, like in the middle of the city. Like, that's where his sort of familial home is. Speaking of family, what we don't see? The murder of Thomas and Martha Wayne. Not really? In this movie. Huh. Which I was stoked for, because we've seen it.
Right.
Yeah, we've seen it. I heard an interview with Matt Reeves where he basically was like, we don't need to see Martha. We don't need to see Martha Wayne's pearls fall on the pavement again. and he's right. Like, it's like the act is implicit. Like, the trauma is very clearly there, and contextually we can do the math as far as all that is concerned. But stacked cast. Pattinson's great as Batman. Very little Bruce Wayne in this movie. Mm-hmm. He's mostly Batman, but he does a great job. Zoe Kravitz as Selina / Catwoman is outstanding. Like, she's such an incredible talent, and she maybe better than we've seen our share of Catwomen over the years. But I think, I don't know that I've ever seen a performer capture the combination of wit and physicality that's so important to that character the way Zoe Kravitz has in this movie. I mean, she's great. Dano, like I said, he's phenomenal. Like, he's someone who, it's kind of crazy to think that he hasn't been in one of these movies before, just because everybody seems to have been. But he's great, and he takes it in a very, like, Zodiac killer direction that is very, very cool. We get to spend some time with an absolutely unrecognizable Colin Farrell as Oz the Penguin. He's more of a mid-level sort of operative at this point, but he's great. Like, he's really going for it. I mentioned Jeffrey Wright. He's wonderful. John Turturro is in this movie as the notorious mob boss Carmine Falcone. He's basically just being John Turturro, but in these circumstances, it works. So he's great. And then just so many other just wonderfully talented performers just popping up for a scene or two. Andy Serkis is Alfred, you know, Batman's butler. He's underutilized, but he's great. Peter Sarsgaard shows up at one point doing some stuff. Like, it's just, it's a wonderful ensemble cast. The action sequences are excellent, not overwrought. You know, you get your Batman fighting guys. You know, you get your hand to hand combat sequences. There's one actually that's lit almost entirely by muzzle flashes. That's pretty awesome to watch. There's a fantastic Batmobile chase because you can't make a Batman movie and not have a Batmobile chase. Like, that's just so it's a really interesting line that Reeves kind of walks. He also co-wrote the script as well as directing, in that he recognizes that there are certain expectations that come from making a movie with this character. And he does his best to meet those expectations while also very clearly making a movie that is personal to him and reflects his sensibilities and his style. And man, that's just not something that you can do. And it's one of those things where I don't think, I think Christopher Nolan did it with his trilogy. I don't know that the MCU, which again, I love, has ever done that. Like, I don't think we've ever seen an MCU movie that was as reflective of its filmmaker as this movie is, because again, Reeves is one of those guys who started making like low-end, like indie sort of dramedy movies, moved on to franchise filmmaking. And so he has feet in both of those worlds, and he brings those thoughts and feelings to his work here in a combination that, I wasn't sure it was going to work. Like, it's a long movie. 3 hours is a long time to sit in a movie theater. But I think the highest compliment I can pay to it in that respect is I didn't once check the time while I was watching that movie. Like, it felt like a tight 2 hours, and like, I'm sure there were things that could have been cut, but nothing that remained felt unnecessary, like you often get in these films with these sort of bloated run times. So yeah, I'm not gonna sit here and tell you that this film reaches the level of Nolan's trilogy. It doesn't. Although if someone wanted to have a conversation about how this movie could potentially be better than, say, The Dark Knight Rises, which was Nolan's third film, I would listen to you. I could see a case being made for that. It's not Batman Begins. It's not The Dark Knight. But it's right below those movies. And those movies are both like blockbuster masterpieces, as far as I'm concerned. This doesn't quite reach that level. But man, if you love Batman, particularly if you love World's Greatest Detective Batman, as opposed to Look at All My Wonderful Toys Batman, you're going to have a really good time with this movie.
All right. Awesome. Alan Adams breaking it down for us. I'm past the popcorn. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.